When you're interviewing for a job with a criminal record, it's like having an elephant in the room. Nobody wants to acknowledge it, but it's there, and it'll be the reason you won't get the job before you face a felony. Talk to an attorney who understands the importance of a clean record.
Call attorney Frank Walker, 412-532-6805. 412-532-6805.
Generation, everybody shout, let's go, boys! You know, I don't know, I just know it sure does make things a little bit more seamless for us. We love playing at home. You guys love pitching at home. It's going to be an opportunity to be a really good ball game. And I love it when our fans show up. They should be loud and they should be proud. And our men will go up there and play, and we're looking forward to it. We really are looking forward to the opportunity. We've earned it.
Glenn Hurdle, Pirates manager, Tim Benz and Guy Junker with you, and Trib Live Radio. And I was thinking, as he was talking there, Guy, they've earned a lot more than that, actually. They've earned better than just having to host the wild card game. I think they've earned a division championship. It just so happens that the three best teams in baseball are in this division.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier, only two Pirate teams ever with more wins. They won 110 games in 1909 and 103 games in 1902, or the other way around. But the other 98 win teams, they won the World Series, or they at least won their division and lost in the playoffs. So the attendance figures I mentioned when Rob was here, the Pirates are 15th in average attendance in baseball and ahead of only the Reds in their own division. What's interesting is when you look at percentage of capacity, though, Tim, because it's a smaller ballpark, they're ninth and tied exactly with the Yankees. So in percentage of capacity, they draw the same as the Yankees at home, you know, in a much smaller city. And on the road, they're third in capacity and fourth overall in road attendance, which means people in other cities like coming out to watch them play.
When you talk about the Yankees, they did make the wild card. They're going to host the wild card. Is this the most under-discussed, quiet, faceless Yankees successful team in history?
Yeah.
And of all the teams in the playoffs, seriously, all the teams in the playoffs, NL and AL, which team have you heard the least about nationally for the past month and a half?
You've heard more about
the Yankees.
The Blue Jays. Certainly.
The two Texas teams?
Hey, congratulations to Jeff Banister. I don't know how much you ever spent time talking to him.
Well, I liked him a lot.
He's a great guy. And, you know, they lost Yu Darvish, and Hamilton went back to rehab. And, I mean, that team was a mess. They lost 95 games last year. He turned it around, and they win the division. That's a great accomplishment.
Sports Talk and Trib Live is always brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand. And we want to give you our Defensive Player of the Game, brought to you by Frank Walker Law, criminal defense attorney, frankwalkerlaw.com. Since there's no Steeler game to come out of this Monday, Guy, how about we go the Pirate route? Starling Marte? Does that work for you?
Hartle said it was the biggest play of the game, and it was, I think, a little bit of Brandon Phillips being Brandon Phillips, but I think it did, because that was Dane. He was the tying run at that time, trying to get himself in scoring. But how about he gave up three hits, and he gave up back-to-backers there? It was the one time he was in trouble.
He made a great catch on Friday night as well in the outfield that helped the Pirates stay in the mix, and, of course, hit the home run, had a double, too. He was great. That's one of the better individual performances. He tends to do that, actually, Marte. He's one of these guys where you can all of a sudden, maybe he's quiet for two or three games and he just dominates a game. He's got that potential. That's what they need out of him, or at least out of one guy.
He's Alexei Kovalev.
Yeah, he needs an Alexei Kovalev kind of night against Jake Arrieta, doesn't he? That's a great analogy. Yeah. I like that. He can go all Kovey. I don't know if he can run the point of the power play or whatever. You know, have him go out there and just dominate a game. And it's tough to do against Arrieta for anybody, especially a right-hander. But wouldn't it be great to see him own that moment, or Kutch own that moment? Somebody hit two home runs and beat him 2-1 with Gerrit Cole on the mound. I don't know what the exact formula is, but I know it's got to be low scoring. I know somebody's got to have to come through in a big way. Probably in the first 7 or 8 innings, or the bullpen has to be crucial and you win it in extras.
You don't know where the future's going with this team. Is this the end of a 3-year run? Did they not get back in the playoffs again?
Well, that's what I was talking about, Rob.
Kutch and industry. And I think that for McCutchen, who has cemented himself as a Pirate, great, an MVP and everything else, to really step above, to be one of those guys you remember forever that's above even Hall of Fame or All-Star material, He needs to have a series. He needs to have a postseason. Had he hit that ball out against Walker that he missed by what he says is a splinter, a tenth of an inch, he might have already done that. But, you know, this is I don't want to put all the pressure on his shoulders and say he's the only way that they can win. But for everything that he's done to this point, Clemente took over the 71 series. Stargell took over the 79 series. You know, Candelaria had some great postseason pitching performances. This is an opportunity here to really really cement himself in Pirate lore if he can help win a wild card game, or if they get past that, have a great postseason.
There's been a hell of a lot of talk here, it feels, in less than 24 hours about whether or not the Pirates are underdogs in this game against Jake Arrieta and the Cubs. Here's what Clint Hurdle had to say about that.
I don't believe from our standpoint, I don't think we're underdogs. I mean, we believe in what we believe in. External noise is just that. We faced ones, we faced two. We're going to face arguably the best pitcher in the game right now, one of them. He'd have to be in that conversation. Anytime we face an ace, I always remind the guys that we just try and stay short, hit the ball hard where it's pitched. You got nothing to lose. Go out there and play like you're in the backyard. Go out there and hit like you're in the backyard and get after it and have some fun with it.
Well, they are underdogs, and maybe they should embrace
that. You got something huge to lose your whole season.
Yeah, you know, he's singing a good tune there, and I know sometimes, Clint, for the sake of it, if a reporter asks a question that is somewhat leading in a certain direction, he's going to counter it just for the sake of doing it. But I would almost embrace the underdog role.
Yeah.
You're at home, and nobody – when has an athlete ever turned a deef ear to the nobody gave us a chance, the whole Heinz
Ward routine?
They love it. They love it. They use it. They seize it. I would embrace it and say, yeah, we are the underdogs in our own place, so let's use that to our advantage. I thought it was great work by Root Sports after the game was over. Savvy camera work and direction. Right after the last out was recorded, they immediately cut to Gerrit Cole walking on the field.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
And he has this huge sigh. He gives a huge sigh, looks up. You know, it doesn't point to the heavens or anything, but you could just read the internal monologue and the body language of what was going on. It's like, okay, this is ready to happen.
And then, you know, I thought it was cool, Tim. He walked down in the dugout, and he signed some kid threw a ball or a hat, I can't remember, down to him with a Sharpie. He signed it and threw it back up, which I thought was a neat thing for the moment. He could have been lost in a moment, and I'm not bothering with this right now. And, I you know, I'm a sap for sentimentality. The One Republic video that they played the cap for the whole season, I thought was really well done. I'm sure they've been working on that for weeks.
Yeah, they did a good job with that, too. It struck me to see Cole's body language, like, okay, this is happening. It's on me now. There was a definite, tangible sense of this is something I have to own. And he really does to keep the team in the game with Arrieta for probably what will be 7 or 8 innings, I would think.
Yeah, I think it's more – we talk about guys have to hit him. We talk about Makai. The pressure is on Cole. It's all on him to stay with Arrieta until something breaks. I think that's their only hope of winning, is if he has one of his best games. I'm trying to find some odds for that game individually. I did find World Series odds in percentages. Royals 22% chance of winning it. Cardinals 16. Blue Jays and Dodgers 14. Mets 11. Yankees 10. Pirates just under 8. Cubs 6.7, so in terms of winning the whole ball of wax, but that doesn't necessarily mean they don't expect them to beat the Pirates.
I can't believe the Cubs are that low when it comes to – well, why do they assume that with Arrieta pitching potentially 3 times?
I mean, you got Arrieta and Lester starting off a series. That's as good as any other – that you know, I'll take that almost – well, maybe not Greinke and Kershaw. And the Texas Rangers are last at 3%.
You're going to get Arrieta with 3 starts before you even get to the NLCS, right?
Yeah.
Why are you putting them down that low? Because if Arrieta were to win the wild card, they would then get Arrieta. Well, I take that back. He only had 1 start. He had 2.
Yeah, and it might not go to full 5. He might just,
Right. Okay, so he would probably only get 2 starts before the NLCS. But then you would get him for 2 to 3 starts in the NLCS. I like those chances. With Lester then getting 2 starts along the way as well. I mean, that's how do you go against the Cubs to that degree there? I mean, you don't have to bet on them, but I like the numbers when you look at how those 2 star pitchers could pitch as often as they are.
What's our, I can't think of his name, our guy that always gives us the betting advice?
Tom Barton.
When he talks about betting baseball, he says, forget hitting streaks, who's high,
home road.
Always bet on the starting pitching matchup. That's how you bet baseball. And how could you, no matter how good Cole is right now, How could you not bet on Arrieta if you're betting on this game?
Well, let's hear from Jay Happ, since I said we'd get to that as well. Here's Happ after the game yesterday as the Pirates clinched home field in the wild card, and Happ was excellent again along the way pitching for Pittsburgh at PNC Park as he goes improves to 7-2 with a 1.85 ERA during his time as a Pirate.
I think we're going to take it like any other one. I think the intensity is going to be there. I'm sure the atmosphere is going to be there. You know, we feel good about Garrett being out there. You know, he brings it every time, and should be exciting. I think we're really happy that the game's here.
Has there been any talk to you about the previous years, exactly the experience, what you might encounter in this kind of game?
You know, I've been waiting to get back to playoff baseball for several years now. So, on a personal note, I'm just really excited to watch it happen. I don't think I wouldn't want to be anywhere else in any other dugout. And I'm anxious to watch our guys play.
You mentioned that. Would you like to find a way to stay here beyond this year? You're putting yourself in a pretty good spot with what you've done.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's something I would absolutely consider. You know, I have nothing bad to say about my time here. In fact, it's all the opposite. Everything's been great. So, that'll happen later on. Right now, we're focused, and I'm hoping to get some more starts down the road here.
How does your mentality change when you made a transition in your technique a bit when you got here, but when it's maintenance, does that change your between start routine or anything you're doing during the game?
Not really. I think, there's no excuses in the game no matter what, so whether I'm off for 9 days or 4 days, you got to be ready to go. So we'll all be ready. Everybody gets their work in, and should be fun.
Jay Happ of the Pirates, like I said, 7-2 with a 1.85 ERA. I looked it up, Guy, because this felt so similar to me to when the Pirates got Zane Smith in 1990. That was the analogy I made before we took a break there a couple minutes ago.
Except they didn't have to give up Moises Alou to get him.
Right, there was no Moises Alou going in the other direction. And I thought, remember, they got Zane Smith to beat the Mets. There was one goal and one goal only with that acquisition. He was a Mets killer, and he came here and lived up to expectations in that regard, and they still coaxed two more decent seasons out of him from that point on. I looked up Smith's numbers since he became a Pirate that season. He was 6-2 with a 1.30. So it was almost just as good, better. Because I only remember him pitching well against the
Zach
Mets.
Zach Duke's first September.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Right. So the analogy that I made in my head, when you look at it on a piece of paper, it actually holds up even more than I thought. Like, those are two very similar guys to what they did when they were acquired. The difference is Zane Smith, they bet everything on Zane Smith doing that. Jay Happ was kind of a desperation. Let's see what we can milk out of him and hope that Charlie Morton gets better. That last part never – Happ took over and has been their best pitcher since he was acquired, even better than Gerrit Cole.
Yeah, and he lost two games. The first one he pitched here where he got clobbered, and the only other one was a 2-1 loss. So he's really only had one bad outing. I did come up with some Vegas odds here, and this I don't understand how this works. The Pirates are more favored than the Cubs to win the National League pennant, 9-2 to 5-1. But to win the World Series, the Cubs and the Pirates are both 12-1 odds. So they figure they both have the same chance at winning the series, but the Pirates have a better chance to win the National League pennant. But in the odds just for the game itself Wednesday, the Cubs are the favorite, 100-110.
100-110. Okay. Yeah. All right.
And so that's the Arrieta factor. So they feel, I think, the way we all do, that if they get by this game and get in a series with anybody, they can compete and maybe even be the favorite. But in this one-game pitching matchup against a guy throwing unheard-of numbers, that they're behind the eight ball.
Brian sent us an email. Tim and Guy, do you know if Ken stuffed the ballot box so he could get the Travis Snyder jersey for the jersey off the back Fan Appreciation Day? Come on, Brian. We all know Ken has 3 Travis Snyder jerseys already. He doesn't have to do something like that.
Right next to his Marian Hossa jersey.
Home, away, and the throwback banana yellow one, just for good measure. This one comes from Brendan. Tim, I noticed something awesome last night. In the movie Back to the Future 2, they mention in the arrival to the 2015 scene that the Cubs will win the World Series, which was surprising. I thought that was pretty funny. Well, that's a bad omen, but I don't remember Back to the Future 2 doing all that great at the box office. So. You know what I remember?
Back to the Future 1 was great. I don't know if I even saw 2.
What I remember was the show, the MLB The Show one, that great ad that they did where the guy was crying, the tear was rolling down his cheek as he was watching the Cubs win the World Series, except it was on the video game. You ever see that?
No.
Josh, you remember, that's a great ad. It was the Cubs, who cares? But I mean, it was just well done. It was a well executed ad. It was so realistic that you had to be in the game to think it was real, but it was so well done that it was good piece. This one comes from Scott in Wexford. If you do one day, one night doubleheader a month, you can keep 162 and a number of gates. You do it one Saturday a month, allow for expanded rosters for this weekend series so the MLB can't bitch about it too much. Or sorry, the MLBPA can't bitch about it too much. This gives you enough room to put in a three-game wildcard series. A Saturday game should be able to draw as much as a midweek game, maybe more, considering April, May, and September are during school.
I have no problem with that, but I'll tell you who will are the minor leagues. Saturday night's their biggest night. They're not going to want to give up five players to go up to the major league team for the doubleheader.
Somebody has to make a concession, though.
Yes, yeah, you're right.
The MLBPA, Major League Baseball, the minor leagues, someone is going to have to make a concession for what I feel is a more equitable way of deciding who gets to go on to the NLDS. So we get to some Penguins emails.
I don't know that enough people will come. I mean, we're very tender to this situation right now. Every couple of years, maybe you'll get a team. I don't think there's enough of a groundswell across all of baseball that there's going to be a change, though. I mean, we can sit here in our ivory tower, and, yeah, this would be better, but I don't think this is like a major issue. And let's say the Pirates, the team that advances from this division winds up, let's say one of these wild card teams, Pirates or Cubs, advances to the World Series again. Like we had two wild card, that's what they'll point to last year. Hey, you had two wild card teams in the World Series. So, I like the thoughts of some of the changes we talked about, but I think we're real far away from it.
From Brian, Tim, have you looked at the other NHL forward options? Sprong was so far and away the best option. All the Sheary, Wilson, Farnham, Rust types, those players are not anywhere close to being legit NHLers. They didn't have another guy that can play in the league, and Sprong clearly showed that he belongs. By the way, a lot of good forwards have signed for under $1 million this offseason. Rutherford should have had it another forward. That comes from Brian, who emails us from South Beach at sportstalk@tribweb.com. Brian, I don't know where you got the impression that I disagree with Sprong being here. I like it. I thought he earned it. I was definitely on board with that. Like I said, I think there's a way, now that you've got Sprong and Perron together on a line with Matt Cullen as your center, to double shift the two other scoring centers, Crosby and Malkin, and get more ice time for them, and potentially, like you said, Guy, get some more productivity from the fourth line or the third line, however you want to say it. I think there's a lot of potential there for experimentation. And I like Sprong, so I don't know where Brian got the impression that I didn't, but I think that's a good move that they made.
Yeah, and I think, I mean,
what do you have to lose for nine games?
Connor,
right?
Sheary was I had heard so much about him and seemed to be so much in the mix. He was the one. He was disappointing to me in this camp. But you know, every camp's going to have a guy that kind of outplays your expectations, makes a run at a roster spot if he doesn't get it, and someone's not going to, you know. A veteran can have a bad camp, and he's still going to make the team. It makes me wonder, though. You know, we commended Rutherford for being able to pull some of the deals off that he did without giving up Pouliot. Maybe teams didn't want Pouliot, you know?
No, you're right. Maybe they were just spooked by how bad he is in his own end. And Rossi gave a really critical review of him and said that he's just terrible. We all knew that he was not good defensively, but he makes it sound like it's even worse than that.
Being good in your own end, though, is a learned trait. Some guys never get there, but he has hockey tools enough that I think it's more of a, I think it's a coaching thing. I think they could make him a better defensive defenseman.
SportsTalk@tribweb.com. Again, to the emails, I think Ramirez is a better third baseman than Harrison. Ramirez and Alvarez can change the game with one swing. For once, Kutch has to come through in the playoffs and produce. That comes to us from Matt, and when we argued about the third base situation, or debated the third base situation, I think we're actually in agreement, you and I. Will see what Josh says when he comes in, but I think you and I are in agreement. The best thing to do is have Harrison come in and play third base to start, have Walker play at second, and then Ramirez come off the bench, and I think you get more potential. At some point, you're going to need a pitch hitter. It's probably going to be a right-handed batter off the bench. So with that being the case, I want to see Ramirez in that role more than the other options.
The thing that really changed my mind, Tim, is the weekend that Harrison had. He's swinging the bat the way he did last year. I think he's more likely to make contact, get on base, and have something happen. Ramirez does give you the power, but I think there's a chance him being 0 for 4 with three strikeouts against a guy like Arrieta, too.
This was another Penguin email. Rutherford got it half right, cutting Gonchar, but he kept Scuderi just as a large liability. Metro Division forwards already have their ears pinned back, ready to attack the soft Penguins' blue line. And what of the decision to go soft? Is entering the season with Chris Letang as your toughest, most physical player really a smart move? He's the only guy on the team that really sticks up for others. Something tells me that won't end well at all. They didn't keep Sestito, the alleged fighter that they brought in. He was let go before even the final roster moves were made. It's not a very tough team. It's certainly not a very physical team. Yeah, that could be an issue. I wonder how Plotnikov will play when he gets a little bit more adjusted to North
America. Well, I see Sestino not making the team as a positive in that they weren't going to have a guy hang around just to use his fists. And I see Gonchar. They made hockey decisions here. I like Sergei Gonchar a lot. He was a great player here. I think I find him to be a pretty good guy. He's one of those. He's a little deadpan. I mean, there's not much personality there. But he's done. He was done when he left here the first time. And the fact that they're that he could have been retarding the progress of one of these young defensemen who Rutherford himself said in the postseason press conference, if these guys don't get some NHL action soon, they're going to start reversing and going backwards. So I'm glad at some of these decisions. That doesn't mean they're a perfect team, but I think they're better than they were at the end of last season. They're maybe a little weaker on defense, better up front, but yeah, how many 2-1 games can you lose? You got to change something.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hill. See all the weekly specials at duffysbeer.com and get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills Village headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game, which is a Monday against the 49ers. We will get back to the NFL a little bit. Former Penn State coach Bill O'Brien with an epic post-game press conference. Josh Taylor joins us. Sports Talk on Trib Live Radio continues in the noon hour, the Four Horsemen Hour, next here in Sports Talk on Trib Live Radio.
Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta, located on 6th Street in downtown Pittsburgh. Fast and free delivery. Give them a call at 412-281-7060. Lunch special starting at just $7.49 with selections including small grilled chicken salad, a bowl of soup, two cuts of pizza and a small garden salad, penne pasta, garlic bread and a small salad, half a hoagie and french fries or half a hoagie and a can of pop. That's 412-281-7060. You can even order online. Giovanni's Pizza and Pasta in downtown Pittsburgh and online at ilovegiovannis.com. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. And online at duffysbeer.com.
You don't need to face criminal charges alone. Call me, Frank Walker, 412-532-6805.
The Four Horsemen of Trib Live Radio.
Anytime you see the Four Horsemen together, it's something special.
Ken Laird, Guy Junker, Tim Benz, Josh Taylor.
Jump on the Horsemen one time, baby. It's an all-night ride.
The apocalypse for Sports Talk Radio is here.
Josh Taylor joining us here on the Four Horsemen Hour. Tim Benz, Guy Junker. It's only three today since Ken is out. Again, Monday is brought to you by Relax the Back Solutions for pain, feel better, work better, live better. Online at relaxtheback.com. Now selling the mattress of the future, the most comfortable bed you will ever sleep on. Relaxtheback.com. And Josh, we spent a lot of time talking about the Penguins in the last hour. Understand no Pascal Dupuis today, so that means Perron has jumped up to the third line with Bonino and Bo Bennett, and then that means that Farnham is playing the left wing with Matt Cullen and Sprong, is that correct?
That would be the fourth line, that's correct. And Jonathan Bombouli is the one that tweeted that out just moments ago. He also tweeted that the Penguins have Sprong on the left half wall on the second power play, so it looks like he's getting some different looks in different situations.
How much of the NFL did you watch yesterday? A guy said he was more or less restricted to the Pirates game. I spent a lot of time watching the Pirates game, watched the 4 o'clock games. Didn't get to see a ton of the 1 o'clock games due to travel and just a bunch of other things. We talked about the Jacksonville Jaguar kicking situation, how hilarious it was that Scobie's replacement in Jacksonville might be even worse than he is, as he missed 3 big kicks for the Jaguars. One where he got a second chance after a penalty that would have won the game, and then another in overtime that cost them. But the Colts, they stink, and they're still going to win that division, you know? They're going to win 11 games just because of their own division, or 10 games just because of their own division.
That's been the AFC South and the NFC South for the past few years now. You don't have to be a good team to win those two divisions because usually 3 of the other teams are terrible. That's the same thing with the Colts now.
Speaking of which, did you hear Bill O'Brien's post-game rant for the Houston Texans?
I heard about it, but did not hear it. The only game I saw, actually, to answer your question, I saw Cincinnati and
the Chiefs.
The Chiefs, thank you.
I saw a little bit of that one, too. I saw about a quarter of that while I was...
And I saw it for 2 different reasons. 1, because I picked Cincinnati picking pork, so I wanted to see how that turned out. And 2, I have Jamal Charles in 2 different fantasy teams, so I wanted to see how he did. So that was a game I was interested in.
Well, here's Bill O'Brien, who was salty after yesterday's loss to the Texans.
Terrible. Starts with me. Terrible coaching. I got to do a better job. I got to figure out what I can do better to be a better head coach of this team. I think as long as you've been in coaching, you've been around things like that. Not too often. And I think, again, it starts with me. It's a bad job of head coaching today. I'm disappointed in me as a head coach. That's what I'm disappointed in. Because I don't think I did a good job today. And I think I have to do a better job of being a head coach of this team. It starts with me. To go out there and perform like that, that's on the head coach. So I'm going to try to do a better job.
And then it continued for another 3 or 4 minutes. Every question was, he went Marshawn Lynch, basically. Every question was, bad head coaching job. It's about the head coach. It's about me. I'm a bad head coach. I stink. I'm a bad head coach. It just kept coming back to him over and over again, which is the right way to take it off the players. But they're 1-3 right now, and you look at that South. Indy is in front, 2-2. Everybody else is 1-3. And I thought that could have been the case, that you could see the Colts getting themselves into the 2 seed or maybe even the 1 seed potentially because of the weakness of the division. I just thought they'd look better along the way. Now, Hasselbeck yesterday instead of Andrew Luck makes it worse, but even when Andrew Luck has been in there, they've not been sharp at all.
Well, and he's got shoulder issues that we didn't know about when I picked them to win or go to the Super Bowl before the season started, too. So some of that could be physical.
There's a lot going on in Indianapolis right now. Andrew Luck's not playing well. There's a perceived beef with the owner and the GM. Well, not the owner, but the head coach and the GM that's going on between Pagano and Ryan Grigson. But if you ask me, as far as everything that's wrong with that team, it's one thing for me. It's the offensive line. And this was a stat that ESPN Stats and Info came up with, I believe it was yesterday. The Colts have invested the least amount of money in their offensive line since they drafted Andrew Luck. The least amount of money in the NFL on their offensive line to protect a guy that they drafted first overall and scouts considered to be the best quarterback prospect since John Elway, and they haven't protected him. That says a lot for me.
If the season were to end today, and of course it doesn't, New England, Indy, Cincy, and Denver would be the division winners in the AFC. Do we see that still being the case by the time December rolls around?
So give them again?
New England, Cincy, Indy, and Denver.
Yes, yeah. I can see that happening.
Yeah.
At least 3 of the 4.
I do now. Who's the one that you would say would change?
Indy may not.
That's the only one that could change.
Boy, but I think Indy still wins it because I think pus in the South.
That division is terrible.
You say pus in the South.
Yes. That's all it is. It's the soft underbelly of football is that division. I think Indy wins that division. I'm more confident in saying Indy wins their division at 2-2 than I am saying that Denver wins its division at 4-0.
That would be fair because, let's be honest, for as good as Denver has been team-wise, Peyton Manning has not been great. He has not been great by Peyton Manning standards. He has not been the Peyton Manning we're used to. We expected to see that Peyton Manning last year, and it didn't happen. But now we're seeing it this year. And they're trying to do as much as they can to have the defense keep them in every game, and they're trying as best as they can to have the running game be the focal point of the offense. I don't know if that can hold up for 16 games, enough for Denver to win that division. So I think he might be on to something there.
Denver, aside from getting gashed on that 4th-and-1 by Adrian Peterson where he ran for like 48 yards and wasn't touched.
Oh, my God.
And I had no idea what the safety was doing on that play. I was watching that game. They drew a circle around the safety, and I was waiting to see, did he go to the wrong hole? He just didn't move. He just stood there. And then Peterson ran through the line and ran for a touchdown.
I was in the Pirates clubhouse when that happened after the game. They showed that running play. And you just heard everybody in the clubhouse go, "Oh," because he broke through. And there was no one in the screen nearby him when he broke through the line. It was insane.
So he scores in the fourth and one, and they end up winning 23-20. Aside from that, I thought their defense was good, and their defense can get after the passer. So I still think they are going to win that division. I feel better about their chances of winning that division now than I did at the start of the year because we talked about it, that they would have a difficult first couple of games, and they would try to survive with Peyton Manning still being at top performance before he erodes as the season goes along. They have done so. They're 4-0 to begin. And they've bought themselves some cushion, is what
Absolutely.
I'm saying. If Peyton
Absolutely.
Manning erodes as we expect him to, they've at least bought themselves some cushion in that division. And Oakland, while I'm surprised they even got two wins to this point, I see them fading. Kansas City, I didn't think would be 1-3 after the first
Nor did
four
I.
games.
That's the biggest surprise for me.
San Diego has not looked good. They did enough to deserve to blow that game against Cleveland that I feel better about Pittsburgh's chances
right.
of playing them.
Had
next
anybody
week,
else been in that game yesterday, San Diego would have lost probably. Few teams, as we already mentioned, other than Cleveland would have lost it in that fashion. The surprise division to me is the NFC East. It stinks, and part of that's Dallas's injury situation.
Right.
But Atlanta's already swept through them. I think they're 3-0 against that division already. They and Carolina both at 4-0 is a little bit of an eye-opener.
I can't say I'm surprised. The thing that surprises me about Atlanta, and it's not Julio Jones. We knew how good he was coming out of high school. He was a top high school player in the country.
He's leading the league in receptions,
yeah,
right?
And Terrell Pryor was number two, for the record, when they came out of high school. But that defense on Atlanta is actually performing better than people expected. Dan Quinn went down there. Remember, he was Seattle's defensive coordinator. Went down to Atlanta, changed the defense up, and they've actually been a lot better than people expected. So I'm actually not that surprised as far as how good Atlanta's doing.
Let's say Cincinnati goes 8-4 the rest of the way, so they finish at 12-4 to win the division. I'll just throw that number out there. They already have four conference wins. They're 4-0, and they're 4-0 in conference. Depending on what teams in the East, if any, give the Patriots some trouble, you could see Cincinnati maybe getting home field advantage throughout the playoffs. I don't know if that's good or bad.
With Dalton splits, that's pretty – well, no, in the playoffs, yeah. His worst splits are regular season playoff, but I'd much give them more of a chance of winning at home than a road game.
I would, too. They could
he seems like a delicate flower for some reason.
I could totally see them getting the 2-seed behind New England and getting home field to the AFC Championship game. That would not surprise me at all, the way that Cincinnati's playing right now. And it doesn't help anybody else in the division at all, because Guy pointed it out. The Steelers could be a game behind Cincinnati right now if they win that game Thursday night. That's probably the Bengals' only threat to win the division. Could they have possibly pulled away at the end? Maybe, because the Steelers still don't have Ben Roethlisberger for at least a few more weeks. So they probably would have pulled ahead at some point to stay ahead. But at this point, yeah, Cincinnati could be the number two seed in the AFC. And I don't know how I feel about the rest of the AFC outside of New England. And Tim, you talked about Denver. That's it for me right now. It might be those three teams.
You brought up how surprisingly bad you think the NFC East is, Guy. I'll talk about how surprisingly good the South is.
Yes.
Carolina and Atlanta both being
4-0. That's what I said. Yes. That's unbelievable. Surprise to
but
me.
That's even more, in my mind, something that I didn't expect. I could have seen the East being mediocre based on – I thought the Cowboys were good. But I could have seen the records being all around 2-2 to start the year after the first four games. I thought we might be looking at the South and seeing four teams at 1-3, one team at 0-4, something like that. The way they flipped it around and those two teams have performed, that's eye-opening to me.
And Carolina's 4-0 without Kelvin Benjamin. He's out for the season after he tore his ACL in the preseason. D'Angelo Williams comes to Pittsburgh. Jonathan Stewart hasn't been playing that great, and Carolina still won four games. So hats off to Carolina.
Another team coming up for the Steelers that I watched a little bit yesterday was Arizona. I thought they were going
to
win that game.
He hasn't played long enough to be 4-0.
Ed Ockley, how many more games is he going to officiate for Carolina between now and then? But I watched Arizona a bit, and I really expected them to take care of St. Louis. But Foles was decent for St. Louis yesterday. He was efficient for St. Louis, if nothing else. And
yeah,
the Cardinals lose that game.
Boy, the Niners stink, though. That win looks less and less impressive every week.
The Rams win looks a little bit more impressive. The Niners win looks even less impressive,
right,
based on what they couldn't do against the Green Bay Packers. Arizona, it appears to me, is susceptible to a good pass rush. Now, it looked like Arizona was struggling with the same things that the Steelers struggled with when it came to pass protection for Carson Palmer. They've just got a good front in St. Louis. We know that. And it took about 15 minutes for it or 20 minutes for it to get going against Pittsburgh. But if Pittsburgh, with their increased pass rush in recent games, can somewhat replicate what St. Louis did, maybe that's the formula to success if by then Michael Vick is a little bit more comfortable in the pocket and the defense can basically win that game and they can get a victory against Arizona.
I think that's fair because what did you see from St. Louis? They made it work. Aaron Donald in the middle getting pressure on the inside. What's been working for the Steelers pass rush? Cam Hayward, Stephon Tuitt on the inside, getting inside those gaps. So, yeah, that's fair to expect as far as the Steelers pass rush maybe getting to Arizona. I'd expect that. The bigger question for me would be, how do the Steelers handle Arizona's pass rush? Because that defense, wow, that defense in Arizona is pretty good. They're very opportunistic, too. When they get turnovers, they don't waste them.
I thought they had that game won when Peterson made the play at the end of the game. Let that pass break up, and they're getting the ball back. And then Palmer threw an awful pass on fourth down.
You can't blame that on the defense. They did their job.
Well, I mentioned earlier that I think at the moment you got to be thinking more because of what the Bengals are doing about a possible wild card Steelers spot, considering Ben's out at least another month and the Bengals are 4-0 and looking real strong. What kills you right now is the fact that the Steelers are 0-2 in the conference because there's a bunch of 2-2 teams that they would be battling if the playoffs started today right now, including Oakland, including San Diego. Now, this San Diego game becomes a big game because they're tied with them. It's one of the 4-2-2 teams right now in the AFC.
Remember I said circle that one at the start of the year.
But San Diego's 1-1 in a conference. If they would beat the Steelers would fall to 0-3. The Chargers would be 2-1. And Buffalo, or the Jets are 3-0 in the conference already. So you're already going to be so far behind even any tiebreakers for a wild card team. This is a big game.
And don't forget, let's say for the sake of argument, since he stumbles a bit here in the second half of the season, common opponents is also a popular tiebreaker. So, and the Bengals have already beaten the Chargers. So if the Steelers want to try to stay in it later on, they got to beat the Chargers too, at least to try to keep in step.
So emailers, what of note did you see from the NFL weekend that was sportstalk@tribweb.com? Give us your thoughts on how all those games yesterday affected the Steelers in your opinion, if at all. sportstalk@tribweb.com. I'll get to some more emails in a moment. Jerry DePaula coming up to talk college football at 12:40. If you want to get some college thoughts in, you can, because what Pitt did over the weekend I thought was impressive on defense, too. Wanted to focus on baseball a little bit more here before Guy steps aside after the bottom of the hour. Clint Hurdle talking about clinching the wild card and getting the wild card game at home at PNC Park. Here he is speaking to some of what Rob Rossi brought up when he was with us in the 11 o'clock hour about organizational success within the Pirates.
They need to have some fun. They need to enjoy the evening. We'll give them a day off tomorrow. Some pitchers might come in and throw. Stay sharp. We'll have a scheduled workout on Tuesday. But it's an organizational success. We're working hard to get better every day, which turns into every week, which turns into every month, which turns into a year. And one of the things I remind players of all the time, when they get in a hurry to play better, that, you know, good to great, if you just focus on being good and you're good long enough, you can turn into being great. Right now we've put some seasons together which show that we're improving and we're getting better.
And I don't want to be Jack Nicholson in the movie, but what if this is as good as it gets? 98 wins, right? 98 wins for this franchise would have been good enough to win the NL Central any time except for those two St. Louis 100 win seasons back-to-back, and I think there's one Astros season where they won 99. But this would have been good enough to win the division, the NL Central, in its existence as a division every other year except those three. This might be as good as it gets, and for all we know, it could be the last in this run of success for the Pirates before, as we talked about with Rob, the roster gets picked apart by what they deem to be economic reality. It could be one and done to Jake Arrieta, because I heard that from Clint Hurdle yesterday, and I heard his soliloquy about not hurrying up and not trying to win too much at one time or not turn the page and just be in the moment. Thankfully, in a mental point of view, Jake Arrieta does that to them, because how can you look beyond Jake Arrieta and that challenge? But you also want to try to fast forward somewhat and say, let's get the divisional series, let's get the NLCS, because Are we going to keep J-Hap? What are we going to do at second base if Neil goes? What are we going to do at first base if they let Pedro go? All these questions are looming big picture, but the small picture seems to be such a huge mountain to climb in Arrieta for the wild card game.
Well, like Bob Walk said a couple of weeks ago, when they got to that third straight playoff appearance when he was on the team in 92, they knew that that team was breaking up and done. And it was a total different mindset than it was the first year or the second year, because they knew this was really their last chance. I don't think this group's in the same picture, but the amount of teams in baseball history at any point under any format that have made the postseason four straight years is very small.
God, it's hard.
If they lose this game now, I mean, I think that's as good as it gets is a perfect way to put it. I always liked Helen Hunt. When she, I don't know whatever happened to her, but
well, you know who had that line delivered to them in the movie, don't you?
Who?
The great Julie Benz.
Oh,
my cousin.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah.
She's
yes.
The blonde boopsie behind the desk. She sure played the bubblehead secretary.
Totally forgot that.
And she delivered the line to Nicholson.
Does she live in California?
Yeah. And she delivered the line to Nicholson where she said, "How do you write women so well?" And he responded, "Well, I start with a man, and I take away all reason and accountability, and that's how I write women."
That might be my favorite line from that movie. That might be it.
So, yeah, she was in that movie. That was one of her first big breakout role hit parts. But this is what I think about the Pirates. You know, here they are. They've gotten steadily better, right? And it's been a more gradual process than I think we want to give it credit for, because the 20 years of losing, the last two were, okay, there's something good here for the first couple months, and then they would just fall apart after the All-Star game.
Yeah.
They collapse after the All-Star game, and it just feels like, all right, same old typical Pirates. They've got enough for the short term, but the long term, this roster just isn't built to sustain. And then when they put it together and they finally won the wild card, and, you know, last year Bumgarner got in the way, but it still felt like there was progress. And I felt like they had a chance to win. I thought they would win the division this year. I picked them to win the division this year. It didn't come to fruition, but they won 98 games. So this is the best incarnation that they've had of this group and the best incarnation of a Pirates team in forever. So 98 wins, you sit there and you say, this should be viewed as nothing but a great accomplishment. But if Arrieta knocks them out in the wild card, you actually feel like they've regressed because they haven't gotten to the divisional series in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it'll actually feel worse because of the potential. And, you know, I thought everything was gravy 2 years ago. I think everybody thought that. And the fact that you pushed the Cardinals to the point you had a chance to eliminate them here at home, and you still pushed them to a game five. But if you go out here, this is going to be, I think, the most disappointing of the 3 years, because I think this team has the most potential to do some damage. And I think 2 years ago, even if you suggested that Pirate team could win the World Series, it'd be a little bit of a eye roll. Really? I'm not sure. And I certainly didn't. 88 wins last year, even though the Giants went on to do that, they regressed a little less. This is the year. I look at this team, I will put them up against anybody in a best of five or a best of seven and think they've got more than a fighter's chance.
That's why, if in effort to be the glass half full guy, that's why I feel better about this team. Because of the three teams of the quote unquote Pirates wild card era, this is the best constructed one by far. And it was the best constructed one even after Jung Ho Gung got hurt. With Jung Ho Gung in the lineup, it's not even close. It far surpasses the other two. But I still like this team as being the best constructed of the three. And this is something I keep coming back to, because I got asked a question a lot during the weekend about how I felt about the wild card game, and I used it in relation to the past two wild card games. The last game in the wild card game, it didn't work the way they probably wanted it to. They didn't even start maybe they're one of their top three best pitchers last season in the wild card game when they started Volquez. But in the wild card game 2 years ago, they started Liriano. He was one of their best two. In this one, they are starting their number one guy, and it's undisputable. This is the guy they're going with. This is their best team of the three. And in this game, of the three wild card games, they're starting their number one pitcher in the wild card game. That's why I give this team the best chance of the three.
And you brought up Walk Guy about that 92 team and the reality of what they were going through in that season. I would argue that the best team of the bunch that they had was the 91 team that actually lost at Three Rivers Stadium.
Before Bonilla left.
Right, before Bobby Bonilla left and Sid Bream left.
I think so, too. He didn't say that was their best team. He just knew it was their last go-around. I thought the 92 team, that was kind of gravy. I don't think people expected them to be back they lost. They lost Bonilla and Smiley. Was that right? Was that
Bonilla,
the two guys?
Smiley. They also lost Sid Bream.
Drabik was still on.
Drabik was still on because Drabik pitched a bunch.
Because he pitched the game seven that they lost.
Belliard left. Right, Rafael Belliard, I think,
he
left
did.
As well.
He became a Brave.
And who was it that no, Belinda, had Belinda been the closer the year before in 91? I don't recall. Was that like Bill Landrum had been the closer in 90. I don't remember who was their closer in 91. I feel like there was a bullpen component or two that got picked apart as well when they went to Stan Belinda in 1992, and we all know what happened there in the ninth inning. But at any rate, you know, that 91 team to me was the one that I thought should have and could have gone to the World Series and won it. I thought it going into the season. I felt it throughout the year. 92, you said it was gravy. I thought they had a chance because Bonds was still there and Van Slyke was still there and Drabek was still there, but I didn't think at the start of the year. I thought they'd be the second-best team in that division. They ended up winning it, and they were underdogs, significant underdogs, I felt anyway, against the Braves. That 91 team, the other reason why I felt like it should have been there is the formula from the year before was perfect. Okay, they got Jose Rio in 1990. Okay, Bonds and Van Slyke and Bonilla, they went through some tough times their first time through the playoffs. Now they'll figure it out. The Braves are the new kids on the block. The Braves have all these young pitchers. It'll run down their leg. They've never done it before.
And they went from the worst team in baseball,
worst and first,
to first that next year. And that was John Schirolz's first year.
And you thought they would approach it as gravy going in, and
right,
it went seven.
But
and
still, you get take a lead into the ninth inning. That was the team that ultimately had the best chance of going. I mean, we were ready to do Sports Beat from Toronto. That was crushing.
You're right about Bill Landrum. He was the closer in 91. And interesting enough, you could argue the team had two closers because Landrum had 17 saves in 91 and Belinda had 16.
Yeah, I remember that. They were starting to transition to Belinda.
Right.
And then Belinda became the full-time guy the next season.
Well, the one thing that tells me a lot of Gong's name keeps coming up in relationship to McCutchen dipping off a bit and in what they could have been if they still had him in the lineup. One thing that tells me a lot about this team, that was we came in here that Friday, and I said, you know, the Cubs came in here and took their money and their women and, you know, and partied on their graves. And they did. That was a bad series. They won that first game and then lost three in a row, and then Gong got hurt, and you got the manager making fun of the injury and everything else. They went 11-5 after that.
They went on the road and swept the
Dodgers. They won eight games in a row on the road.
Yeah, they took two out of three, and they beat Kershaw in the process.
The only two guys they lost to on the road trip were Greinke and Arrieta.
And Arrieta.
I mean, that tells me something. And they did that with McCutchen having his worst month of the year since April. So, you know, it's not all Andrew McCutchen. It's not all, you know, they've been able to survive what was really a terrible series and a terrible injury, and I wouldn't have thought they'd have won. When that did, they had 87 wins when he got hurt. I'm thinking then maybe they get the 94-95, they'll be lucky.
And Tim mentioned this earlier when Clint Hurdle talked about whether or not the team were underdogs, and I agree with Tim. He's looking at it the wrong way, but here's why. This team has done the most impressive things that they've done when they haven't been expected to, when they've actually been considered underdogs. Remember when they went to New York? And we were worried about the pitching matchup against the Mets, and they went and swept the Mets.
Yeah.
Because the Pirates started pitchers. They started the lower end of the rotation, and the Mets had the higher end of the rotation, and they took three against the Mets and swept the Mets. After they lose Gung, they go to L.A. They only lose to Greinke, but they beat Kershaw. They took two out of three from the Dodgers. They went four straight in Colorado. It's been when this team hasn't been expected to do the things that they've done is when they perform their best. That series before the All-Star break, when St. Louis came to town, there were a lot of people that were dreading that series because it was for the All-Star break, and we were saying this team will probably be out of it because the Cardinals are going to come in and blow them out of the water. It took three out of four and roughed up Trevor Rosenthal in the process. So that actually adds up for me.
A few emails from listeners and tweets as well from Lou. Tim, I agree. We need to bunt. Just watch where defenses bunt hitters. All they want to do is hit the long ball. Also, if Arrieta is throwing a no-hitter bunt, there are no unwritten rules, and you are trying to win the game, go Bucks.
I would love that theory a lot more if the Pirates were good at bunting, but they're terrible at it.
Marte, when he wants to do it to get a hit, is pretty good at
it. He might be the best one on the team at it, but for the most part, this team is not good at bunting. They're really not good at it. They bunt
Harrison?
It. Harrison?
Harrison screws it up on occasion, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, they've bunted into a lot of double plays, this team. They're not very good at bunting to move runners over. They're just not good at it.
I'm not even talking
about
moving runners over. I'm talking about occasionally to get a hit.
Yeah, Marte is the best one by far
well,
at it.
Well, his speed makes him, you know, with that kind of speed, you just don't hit it right back to the pitcher and you're got a shot of beating it out.
But he's got good placement with it, too. He knows
I like
where
Charlie
to put
Morton
it.
As a bunter in terms of sacrificing among pitchers. I had a long talk with him in spring training about productivity as a pitcher with the bats because Hurdle would, you know, organizationally they wanted all their pitchers to do a little bit more with the stick, and If you look at the Sabre metrics, Morton's their best hitting pitcher, not in terms of batting average or hitting a home run, just in terms of when he needs to get a guy over with a ground ball or bunt a guy up, he normally gets it done.
And it, honestly, from the standpoint of small ball, because I do think that might be necessary to win this game, it's not even about bunting with me. They've got four guys with double-digit stolen bases. If McCutchen, Marte, Polanco, or Harrison get on, you're running. That's it. There's no question. You get on, green light, go. Because Arrieta, I think 26 runners have stolen on him, and he's only caught five of them.
Well, they have some defense hitting questions, too. Starling Castro is a better hitting shortstop than Addison Russell, Addison Russell. But yet, he's a better shortstop. The catcher.
So is Baez.
They have the same situation at catching. You've got a better hitting catcher in Montero.
Well, in Montero and Schwarber, but Ross catches Lester. So there's that dynamic, too.
Two firings, one from football, one from baseball, we should bring up. Of Joe Philbin out with the Dolphins and Matt Williams out with the Nationals.
We knew that. That fight in the dugout sealed his deal. He would have been fired anyway, but you don't even know what's going on at the other end of your dugout. Get the hell out.
Not that I think Philbin is any good, but the bigger story in Miami is what a bust Ndamukong Suh has been so far.
When they signed him, I'm sitting there going, can Ndamukong Suh play quarterback? Because I wasn't sure about it then, and I'm not sure about it now. And they signed Ryan Tannehill to that extension, but I don't know if it was worth it.
Yeah, Tannehill was, 14 of 44 or something?
He was not good.
Really bad.
Even when he's good by comparison, it's okay, but can you do better than that when it counts? And I don't know if he can. As far as Matt Williams, this guy was the National League Manager of the Year last year. The Nationals were favorites to win the World Series. I'm not even ready to blame Matt Williams for all of this. I think I blame Mike Rizzo more because he made that trade. And all the signs before it pointed to him not making that move, and he made it anyway, and that's when the season started to implode because they lost the clubhouse after that trade.
Back to the Penguins. Ryan, I'm shocked to see that the Pens let Gotch go, but it was the right move, something the Lemieux-era Penguins aren't known for doing. My preseason prediction is that this team most closely resembles the 05-06 or perhaps 06-07 Pens from the Crosby era, not a playoff/cup competitive team. I'm with Rossi on that. They've assembled a roster that is El Stubborno Lemieux in design, not the way that you have to play in the NHL. Not only that, but their division has a bunch of teams designed to neutralize scoring and bog it down. I think they're going to be middle of the pack in the top five of the Eastern Conference. I think they're like a 4-5 team. Maybe one of the top two wild cards that get in, or like the last team that gets in on its own merits within its division.
Yeah, I think they are. Quite as negative as what he says, but he's right about the rest of the division, and it's been proven. They've been able to shut them down. I think they have a better potential, though, of being tough to shut down this year than they have been in the past.
Well, here's something I saw this morning that I thought was interesting.
I mean, you play along with the rest of the division and try to become a – I mean, they didn't have a defensive core. You can't redo the whole 6, 7, 8 defensemen. The strength of this team is still Crosby and Malkin and Letang, offensive players. So instead of being somewhat balanced offense, I think they've kind of gone all in to be a pretty high potent offensive team to combat the slowdown in goals and see how that works.
I agree with Tim. I think there are 4 or 5 in Eastern Conference is where they end up. But something I saw this morning, EA Sports, of course, NHL 16 is coming out. They did their trailer where they do the projections and the predictions for this season. They picked the Penguins to finish 4th through their simulations. They also have the Penguins in the Eastern Conference Finals losing to Montreal. Hmm. So, how about that?
I thought of you over the weekend and on Thursday night, Josh, with all the pink stuff, since you were going off about the lack of money that's actually going towards breast cancer research from the money that's brought in.
Was
from
it 8%?
8% or
so
something like
that.
Where does
it go? Just for administrative costs?
There was a breakdown for it.
Yeah, there was a breakdown. Somebody sent it to me.
By the way, happy birthday, man. Yesterday was your birthday.
Thank you. Big 3-4.
I was going somewhere with this, too. It's the big 5-0 for Mario?
Yeah.
Mario's 50 today?
Mario's 50
yeah.
today.
Wow.
Mario's 50. How does that make y'all feel?
I hope they don't go overboard like the Michael Jordan was 50 celebration, because that was just ridiculous. That was the most hero worship I've ever seen in my life. But I hope they do
it in a tasteful fashion. Well, ESPN doesn't cover hockey, so you're not going to have to worry about that. That won't happen. Chris from Latrobe was the one that sent me that email. I didn't realize.
Bear LaRouche will give him a cigar and a bottle of wine, and that'll be it.
the October breast cancer stuff breakdown. 8.01% goes to the American Cancer Society for research. 1.25% goes to the NFL. 3.24% goes to the American Cancer Society Administration. 37.5% goes to the manufacturers, and 50% goes to the retailers.
Manufacturers and retailers of what?
The stuff.
Whoever makes the pink stuff that they sell.
Oh.
So you're losing like 87.5% to the manufacturers.
Why does the NFL need to get anything? Can't they give up their 1%?
One and a quarter percent.
The reason I thought about that and brought it up here again is I heard over the weekend that if you play the new Madden game, since you brought up EA Sports, if you play the new Madden game in October, everybody wears pink.
Oh, get out of here. I'm gonna go home tonight and try that, now that you brought it up.
They've gone to
try it.
That graphic detail that, like, Rex Ryan on the sideline has the pink ribbon and Antonio Brown and Michael Vick have the pink shoes and all that. If you play in October in your season, you will have the pink.
I'm going to go home and find that out tonight.
Monday's shirt, a birthday present.
What's that?
The 412.
I've had this for a while.
Oh, I never saw you wear it before.
I think I bought it like beginning of September. I'm selective with wearing it.
Final thoughts, Guy, before you get out of here?
Man, if you can't get excited about a week like this, you got the wild card game Wednesday. The Penguins open the season Thursday. Pitt's finally back home Saturday. Penn State's homecoming is Saturday. The Steelers are on Monday Night Football. This is going to be a great week for the show. I can't wait for it all to unfold.
Especially after a terrible week last week. This one has to be better by default, right?
You can hope.
And I definitely want to see the
Pirates.
You
could have the Pirates lose, Sidney Crosby get hurt in the opener, and Pitt come home and lay an egg after a big win.
Now that you've said it. More panic has been incited.
You never know what happens.
Mondays on Trib Live Radio, brought to you by Relax the Back, solutions for pain. Feel better, work better, live better. Online at relaxtheback.com. Now selling the mattress of the future, the most comfortable bed you will ever sleep on. Relaxtheback.com. And it's pink. Jerry DePaula next. We'll talk to him about Pitt and what the Panthers did over the weekend against Virginia Tech. Defense all the time. That's right. Defense, defense, defense with Narduzzi as the coach, and it's panning out. Talk to Jerry about that next here on Sports Talk, Sports Radio on Trib Live.
Relax the back, solutions for back pain. Feel better, work better, live better. Don't let back pain keep you from the golf course. Let our specially trained associates guide you to the perfect solution for your discomfort. Relax the back, now selling the mattresses of the future, the most comfortable bed you will ever sleep on. State-of-the-art mattresses and pillows for better sleep and a healthy lifestyle. We offer a complete line of comfort solution products that will improve posture, circulation, and overall health, including a wide array of ergonomic office solutions, back support, height-adjustable desks, fitness and therapy products, and the best selections of zero-gravity recliners available anywhere. Relax the Back Solutions for back pain, the country's leading specialty retailer of neck and back pain relief and back comfort products, as well as world-class massage chairs, located at 6343 Penn Avenue. Call 412-362-2225. That's 412-362-2225. Online at relaxtheback.com.